Hi, everybody. This is Dave Custy. You're listening to Baltimore Internet Radio. Today, I'll be interviewing Mark Dunfrey, the executive director and founder of the Institute for Cultural Diplomacy. Founded in 1999, the Institute for Cultural Diplomacy is an international, not-for-profit, not-governmental organization with headquarters in Berlin, Germany. The ICD's ultimate goal is to promote global peace and stability by strengthening and supporting intercultural relations at all levels. Over the past decade, the ICD has grown to become one of Europe's largest independent cultural exchange organizations, hosting programs that facilitate interaction among individuals of all cultural, academic, and professional backgrounds from across the world. Welcome, Mark, to Baltimore Internet Radio.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
Well, tell me a little bit about yourself. Give me a little personal bio.
All right, very briefly, from a small town in Massachusetts called Amherst, college town. Studied then in New York City and then in Paris, and I've been in Berlin the last 13 years, getting to be a Berliner. And my main interest has always been bringing people together who normally wouldn't come together and trying to foster greater bridges in terms of building trust and building relationships.
Is that how you got interested in starting ICD?
It is. ICD I initially founded where I saw, actually initially with the French-American relationship, the strange relationship where the French loved Americans and American culture, but they hated American culture. And the Americans loved the French, but they hate the French. And sort of the strange tension with two countries that are so similar, but really got hung up when it came to culture. And so I basically said, how can this be? You know, there's got to be a way of bridging this. And then, of course, if you take it to the next level, for example, let's say relations between the U.S. and the Middle East, there you have an even more extreme situation where there's a gap, where you have many countries where there's no understanding, where there's no trust, and where there's no dialogue even. So that's the main interest that I had in terms of how one can respond to a need like that, in terms of trying to bridge also various chasms between cultures and between peoples.
Well, how did that tie happen that you were from Amherst and then now you're doing ICD? There's some kind of something. Was there one particular time moment, or was it just a series of events that you saw that you thought you would address this problem?
Well, I was initially actually doing an internship during my college days at the French Embassy. And that was where I really got interested in this French-American relation. I noticed how, for the French, the culture really matters. The French spend a lot of money on cultural diplomacy, promoting French culture abroad. They also spend a good deal of resources protecting French culture. Quotas on the radio, for example, limiting the amount of foreign music that can be played. And I saw that was really what caught my attention. And I noticed that actually you have a lot of governmental organizations doing cultural diplomacy, which is great. Although the limiting factor of that is, of course, at the end of the day, the governmental agenda is the most important. So at the end of the day, the French cultural diplomacy is trying to promote France. American cultural diplomacy is trying to promote the U.S. So there's really a need, first of all, for more research in this field, where there's hardly any research. Secondly, for more programs, not linked or limited by one governmental mandate, but more focused on the bridges in between. And that's really the niche we're trying to fill with ICD, to try to have programs that really strengthen the bridges without controlling what traffic goes in those bridges.
Okay, Mark, well, tell me about ICD. How did you start that?
So I started the Institute for Cultural Diplomacy, where we really noticed a niche in the market where there was really no research in the field of cultural diplomacy, or very little. There were primarily governmental organizations doing cultural diplomacy, and really no non-governmental organization focused on it. And in terms of teaching, really no teaching. So if you wanted to learn about cultural diplomacy, you couldn't. There was maybe one or two classes offered in the United States, for example, that kind of would touch on cultural diplomacy. But it was really, in many ways, a new and unexplored field. So that was the main interest as to why we started.
How did it start? I mean, was it you and you had some like-minded people, or how did that happen?
Yeah, initially it was me, and I had an idea, and then, you know, step by step we started. The first year we actually just began our work. We didn't have funding, we didn't have offices, really, you know, on a grassroots level we began. The first events we did, we didn't actually have any revenue, but we also avoided most expenses. So an embassy would let us use their embassy for free, the speakers would come without demanding honorarium or anything, and we just sort of started. That was how we built the initial track record, and based on that, we actually got a phone call. Our first real project in terms of funding was with the Canadian Foreign Ministry. And at this point, I was in Berlin, and the Canadian Embassy called and said, hey, you know, would you be interested in beginning a new program bringing young leaders together from Canada and Germany? And they had heard about us from the track record we had made from that first year. And so really, in a very grassroots level, we really started step by step with the first programs. Then we had the one-room office, two-room office, and step by step grew from there. So a typical grassroots organization in that sense.
And this was back in 99?
Yes. Unofficially, we started in 99. Officially, we began in April of 2001 as an American 501c3, or an American nonprofit, and then in 2002 as a German nonprofit.
So how did you end up in Berlin?
Berlin, I ended up initially, I had a fellowship to study here. I actually got two fellowships, and you can only take one at a time. So I did the first year and then extended it for the second year. And that was where I noticed Germany was a very interesting country when it comes to culture diplomacy. Where really, since the Second World War, Germany has been all about soft power. The world, for obvious reasons, wouldn't allow them to have a hard power army anymore. So really, for many reasons, they've been focused on soft power. They haven't intervened militarily the way the U.S. or other countries has, which gives them in many ways greater legitimacy when they do culture diplomacy, and since the foreign policy is very much correlated with the soft power policy, which wasn't always the case with the U.S. And today, if you look at the German foreign ministry, they have three pillars: politics, economics, and culture. The cultural section of the foreign ministry has a bigger budget than the political section, and I think Germany is the only country in the world. I mean, the USA doesn't even have a ministry of culture, let alone really a serious culture diplomacy department. So that was where I noticed for culture diplomacy, Germany is really doing interesting things in terms of magnitude. They're doing a lot, and in terms of style, it's a little bit more of a humble approach than some of the other countries. So that was really got me interested, and we decided really Berlin was the place. We should really center this field of research, field of teaching, and also field of programs.
So you've been there the whole 14 years?
Yes. Yeah. So it was actually August of 2000. It's actually 13 years. So it's now August of 2013. Yeah.
And so you started off with the one project, and how did it blossom into what you have right now? Just go a little bit step by step. You started out with one, and then you got more people interested in it. What other countries are part of this?
Yeah, so the first project, as I said, is when the Canadians approached us. That was an interesting historical moment where the Marshall Plan, many people don't know this, 17% of the Marshall Plan was paid for by Canada. So it wasn't just American money or U.S. money. And there was a fund called the European Recovery Program, which was a German fund giving money back to the U.S. as kind of a thank you for the Marshall Plan. But at that time, they weren't doing anything with Canada. So that was our rationale why the Germans should actually fund. They were the primary funder for this program with Canada and Germany. So it was an interesting program historically. We got going with that. That went very well. And then we noticed that in Germany, the largest diaspora of Turks outside of Turkey is actually here in Germany. Now, you have a big Turkish diaspora, and there was actually a challenge where the Turks were living next to the Germans, but not necessarily with the Germans. And when it comes to multiculturalism, integration, there were challenges there. You had cases where you didn't have understanding, where you didn't have trust, where you didn't even have dialogue. So we said, all right, this is our idea. Let's try to do something ourselves to help. And so we basically sent grant applications, about 20 or 30. Most of the foundation said no, and then one of them said, that's interesting, the Bosch Foundation. And then really together with this private foundation in Germany, we built the program, and they did the initial seed funding, and really from scratch, we started something that we thought really mattered and was important for the German-Turkish relationship. So that was the second program, and you know, without going into a long story, that was essentially how we developed. You know, do one project well, build on it, that will hopefully attract the next project. And now we work with governments, we work with foundations, we work with universities, we really believe in the power of partnership. You can learn a lot from the partners. You can also pool together different resources. So that was essentially the story.
So how many countries now are involved?
I mean, ideally, our mandate is global. So we really want to be everywhere in the world. The main limitation is, of course, resources. So I would say the only thing we need to actually do a program in another country is a local partner. And thanks to many partners we've built up over the years, we started small. We started in Berlin doing events here. And then gradually, more or less geographically, we grew. So we now do projects all over Europe. We just did a conference recently in London and in Brussels. We just did a conference before that in Washington and New York, and before that in Rome, before that in Reykjavik, Iceland. In Ankara, in Istanbul. So we're still not global. I think global is a goal that maybe we'll never reach. But we really want to get going more in Africa. We want to get more in Latin America and also Asia. But Europe, we're getting more and more present. And usually when we do these events, you probably saw on our homepage, it's really at the highest level. So in Rome, we had the Prime Minister of Italy, the Foreign Minister, the Minister of Culture. So they're really great ways of also raising the awareness of this field in different countries.
So you have conferences, and you set up agendas with the conferences. What happens after the conferences are over? How does it continue?
So the main – I'll give you one example. So in Italy, the way it worked, this is the first event we had ever done in Italy. We were lucky that the honorary president of the ICD is Italian. His name is Francesco Rutelli. He's the former mayor of Rome, former minister of culture of Italy. And he really is a believer in culture diplomacy. So it's really thanks to him and his relationships that we got, you know, the president, the prime minister, the foreign minister, and the minister of culture. So we did a great event. A lot of important people came. We got, first of all, great press coverage, which was important. Really, at that moment in time, all of Italy, for at least for that moment, was talking about culture diplomacy. Then we also did, parallel to that, a young leaders program where we brought young leaders together from around the world to work on culture diplomacy. So they also took part in the conference, and we told those young leaders, all right, after this program, you all are drivers, not passengers, in the sense they were there because they wanted to give to society, not take from society. And we asked them to do what's called leadership initiatives, which are projects once they get back home. ICD can't do much to help Italy. The Italian young leaders can. So the idea is, how can you empower those Italian young leaders to actually go and do their own projects, bringing people together, even in terms of integration, multiculturalism within Italy or also other places? So that was one example. Second example, we ended up building two partnerships. One is with the University of Siena. The other is with a university called Uninatuno, which is the leading online university in Rome, or in Italy, based in Rome. And there we're actually doing master's programs in partnership with them. Two semesters in Italy, two semesters in Berlin. So that's obviously very interesting from a sustainability point of view, where really you can have an effect on individuals in a much larger way. So really people who decide for 2 years of their life they want to study cultural diplomacy at the graduate level. So that would be one of the concrete outcomes that also came from a conference. So to answer your question, the ultimate goal isn't just to have a conference where people talk and go home, but really to try to use that as a catalyst for more sustainable initiatives that really can impact the lives of individuals, whether it's students who are studying or those who are affected by the projects that come thereafter.
Well, that's basically my remit too. I didn't start a station just to promote a city, but I wanted to, I have the ability to have an ongoing dialogue with people like you and in the world, really, and that's what I want to really to keep going and keep going. That's why I really like the idea of the Institute for Cultural Diplomacy. As I can just put a plug in there for you, but tell us a bit about these programs that you have. Besides the conferences, you have programs. You talked about the MA program in cultural diplomacy. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Sure. So a key thing for us is really education, in the sense right now, before ICD, it was very difficult to learn anything about culture diplomacy. So research is important. We published a book last year called Searching for Culture Diplomacy, with examples from culture diplomacy around the world, raising from Asia to Africa to the Middle East. Teaching, we offer a number of programs. We have graduate programs. So we offer now four MA programs in partnership with universities around Europe, usually two semesters here in Berlin, two semesters there. And another thing that makes the programs unique is what we call professional development. So very briefly, I don't want to bore you with the details. The first semester is five classes, primarily in cultural diplomacy. Second semester is two classes. And then the rest of the time, the students are doing professional development projects where they're actually implementing cultural diplomacy. So it's very hands-on. So if an MA student tells me, Mark, I want to work for the United Nations 2 years from now, we'll do projects during professional development that will prepare them for the UN, either partnering with the UN, bringing speakers from the UN, etc., to give them experience as well as contacts that can help them when they're moving on in their careers. So the MA programs, I think, are a great way of really learning about this field as well as getting professional experience that can help you in the job search. We also offer online courses, ranging from four-week courses that you can sign up for and do totally remotely to actually an entire degree. With Uninatuno, it's a two-year MA, fully accredited European Union Bologna Process MA. We also offer shorter programs. For example, I just came from a lecture I'm giving to a week-long summer academy. These are individuals from around the world that have come for 1 week to try to learn about the theory and practice of cultural diplomacy. We also have a four-week version where you can get a certificate in cultural diplomacy. So over 4 weeks, you look at the theory as well as the practice. You'll meet ambassadors, practitioners, as well as professors, teaching you sort of the theory behind cultural diplomacy, what it was before, as well as what it can be. And there we look at actually conflict zones, as well as post-conflict zones and peaceful relations, each kind of relationship demanding a different kind of cultural diplomacy.
Okay. For lack of a better word, are these courses, these MA courses, are they have any kind of accreditation?
Yes.
I'm talking about in terms of, I don't know if it would, if that's really applies, but you know, it sounds like you have really good ways of contacts and networking afterward, but I was just wondering what people can do with them.
Yes, the degrees are accredited around the world. So there, right now it's the European ECTS system through the universities we partner with. So with the University of Siena, the degree you get is from the University of Siena. And in that sense, the semesters here are authorized by them and actually approved by them and accredited by them. So right now the degrees we offer are European degrees, ECTS, European Union approved. We're in the process of also building partnerships with some American universities, not yet finalized. That would also give us American accreditation. But usually the European accreditation is also valid in the U.S. So the MA programs are accredited. The certificate programs right now are just from ICD, so you'd get a certificate from us, which you can use for your CV, etc. There aren't academic credits associated with that. So just the graduate degrees are accredited.
So how would a person go about contacting you and finding out more about what's to get an MA and online courses? And I mean, it's basically the website, right? But I'm just leading into, you talk a bit about the history, about what events you have and some of your members and the current status. What do you see happening in the next couple months, and how do people get involved with that?
So, yes, so of course, the best thing is the website, where you can get an overview for everything we're doing and try to see, you know, what topics might be of interest to you. Maybe we're actually doing an event that's close by. For example, it's not yet on the internet, but we're planning to do a big event in the Library of Congress in November. That'll be our next event in the USA. So, of course, website's the best way to get information. If anyone wants, they can email me. The easiest address is just info, I-N-F-O, at culturediplomacy.org, which is the same as our website. And we'd be very happy to receive interest. I mean, one of our big challenges in the USA is to avoid preaching to the choir. Very often the people who come to our events are people who already are interested in cultural diplomacy, people who do want to learn about other countries. But there's a lot of America, for example, that doesn't have passports. As far as I know, the last statistic I heard, I think it's 30% of Americans have passports.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I don't know if that's still true, but the point is a vast group of Americans don't even have a passport.
Yeah, you're in the ballpark there.
I'd love to do more work there. What's that?
You're in the ballpark there. It's about okay. That, I think.
Yeah, and I'd love to really bring, let's say, that 70% of Americans, them to our programs. So that's where, again, this kind of interview is great, just to sort of raise awareness. And we'd also love to do more events in Baltimore and other places. So far, we've only done events in Washington and in New York. And the key thing we would need is a local partner. So if there's anyone listening out there that would like to partner with us, let us know. Whether it's a university or an NGO, that's really all we need. And we could actually start to do events in Baltimore and also other cities.
That sounds like a plan. It sounds like I can be a cog in that. I hope to be a cog in that. Back again to what you were talking about in the U.S. is my next question. What type of involvement currently do you have with U.S. partners? You talked about the Library of Congress, and you talked about New York, and maybe I can do some work about getting some Baltimore partners here. But are there any other places that have really been taking up your initiative?
Yeah, I mean, we've had some great partners, primarily in the New York, Washington area. One of the big partners is National Public Radio, NPR. Usually they always host our events in Washington. We've also done events with them in Berlin. The one place where NPR has a station outside of the U.S. is in Berlin. We were also helpful in that process of getting them the radio station here. So NPR is a big partner of ours. The last event we did at Johns Hopkins University, they hosted us, the Center for Transatlantic Relations. Georgetown University has been a big partner, Columbia University, the Goethe Institute, many of the cultural institutes. So a wide variety. But those are some of the partners that we've worked with in the recent months.
So tell me more a little bit now about the Library of Congress event in November, because if all goes well, maybe I will cover that with a live remote.
Excellent. No, this is an event that will be taking place November 4th until the 7th in the Library of Congress, where on the one hand, we want to look at cultural diplomacy. On the other hand, we want to look at cross-continental cooperation, in particular, the relations between Europe, the USA, Russia, and China. For many reasons, you can say this quartet isn't working so effectively, for a lot of reasons, and we want to see why, and we also want to see how cultural diplomacy could give contributions. China, on the one hand, is increasing at a very fast pace. They started cultural diplomacy in 2004 when they opened the first Confucius Institute in Seoul, South Korea. They now have 396 Confucius Institutes, and they plan to build 1,000 in the next 5 years. So in a big way, China is saying culture matters, culture is important. They're planning for 500 5 years, where the U.S. very often plans for 5 years, in the sense of really moving their language, establishing their language across the world. You know, America doesn't even have a Ministry of Culture, whereas China is offering free Chinese classes in inner-city schools in Chicago. So it's a very interesting policy where China, in a big way, is expanding their culture. Russia, as you know, has many challenges, primarily with the current administration and many of their policies. Some would argue, you know, lack of democracy. It's a whole debate, but there's sort of interesting challenges that come with Russia as well. And then the USA-European relationship, which in many ways should be easy. And, you know, given our common experience, we should be the best of partners. But also that relationship, I wouldn't say it's dysfunctional, but certainly can be much more optimized in terms of really working together as partners on a variety of issues, whether it's climate change, you know, terrorism, poverty, any of these issues. So that's the main focus, really looking at this quartet and how cultural diplomacy can help in increasing cross-continental cooperation.
And what does it look like in terms of partners attending the event?
So again, I don't want to announce too many details yet because we haven't yet published
it on the website. It's just in their infancy stages.
So the plan is actually to be 4 events. Berlin is the first, September 25th until the 27th. Then the USA, November 4th until the 7th. Then Moscow, then Beijing. So right now, very soon, probably in the next week, maybe by the time this is online, you can see it on our homepage. The Berlin event is already there. And but it'll be a very prominent group. I can say that. On the European side, we actually have 2 very prominent individuals coming. And also from the American side, it should be very good in terms of Congress, also Senate. So I can't give actual details yet, but I'm hopefully whetting your appetite.
No, that's a good teaser you just gave. That's great.
It should be quite interesting. And especially right now, I think people realize the urgency also for more cooperation on these issues, because it's looking more the opposite, especially with the recent U.S.-Russian sort of downturn.
Right.
I think it's very relevant now to see, all right, how do we come together? How do we really resolve some of these issues and get to work? You know, we don't have time to waste for cultural diplomacy. As important as cultural diplomacy is, we've got to get to the table and work, you know, and actually deal with a lot of big issues. And right now, we're not dealing with many of them for actually silly reasons. So I'm looking forward to the conference.
Well, they say 90% of life is just showing up. And in terms of that, it is just to start to talk, start the dialogue, sure. You know, and just to have like-minded people. That's what I'm hoping to do with my radio station also, not just to keep plugging myself. But, hey, it is my station, so I can do that. All right. So, Mark, let's go back just a little bit in terms of a business plan. You told me what's going on, what's happened, what's going on now. Where do you see yourself in, say, 3 to 5 years?
Well, really what we need to do is to go to places where really cultural diplomacy is needed. We initially were very cautious about going to conflict zones as well as post-conflict zones. And I initially said, look, if people are trying to stay alive, if people are trying to eat, what use is cultural diplomacy? But we're seeing that actually there is actually a benefit of cultural diplomacy and certain things can be done. In the case of Israel-Palestine, for example, they've had very fascinating work with sports as cultural diplomacy, bringing Israelis and Palestinians together to play on the same team for soccer games. And it's actually, for example, the Paris Center for Peace in Israel, as well as the Street Football World, which is another organization based in Berlin, has actually done great projects during the conflict, actually right now, bringing people who normally wouldn't come together together. So I think first area we want to do more work is actually in conflict zones. Second area, post-conflict zones, look at the Rwandas and the South Africas, where some think it's impossible, but really to a large degree they have actually overcome, not all of the problems, but many of them. And you do have a certain reconciliation that has been established. So that proves to me that actually it can be done, even in the most violent of circumstances. I mean, Rwanda, where you had genocide, you have individuals living next to each other now that were actually killing each other not too long ago. So that gives me hope that also in post-conflict situations and conflict situations, something can be done. So that's, for me, the most exciting territory where I think really cultural diplomacy can do a lot, as opposed to just winning the hearts and minds of foreign audiences, as it was in the Cold War. So those are some of the things we're excited about doing more work with.
Well, I can understand that, because just in trying to establish this radio station, I've made some pretty nice contacts with people in Syria, people in Palestine, and just to be able to talk to people on the ground, you know, the people that live day in, day out, not the politicians, but just the regular Joes, to say an American term. It's encouraging, really. And to continue that dialogue, and I think that's what you guys are doing, the Institute for Cultural Diplomacy, and I hope to, I'd like to be a part of that. I would like to, we could have an ongoing relationship, and hopefully we can bring something to Baltimore. And then also what I would like, I lived the last 10 years in Belfast. And you know, of course, you know, what's been going on there in the last 30 years, and there still is some, you know, conflict with mostly the extreme sides. But I think something like what you do can really be a helpful step. And also maybe something that will, you know, next generation can benefit from. That's what you really are really looking to when you say you have a program with the young, is to really start with the next generation too, in terms of collaborations, of networking, and just to really, you know, get more of a peaceful settlement between people.
No, exactly. We have a big emphasis on youth. I would say that's definitely priority one, but not only. I mean, there, if you look at our advisory board, et cetera, we have also a lot of senior people, you know, former heads of state, current heads of state, and we think the mixture between the generations is also very important. So I would say both, but yes.
Right. No, I didn't mean that's as exclusive, but I mean that's a really good start in terms of getting people to, you know, just to change their thinking, or to really to see that there's other human beings in the world that think the same of you, and maybe that's a basis on a relationship. You know, but I can see that you have people that are of high power. I see the president of Australia is on there, and you know, you talked about Italy, and you talked about different places in the world, Turkish, at Turkey, and all. And so, you know, it seems like you've got a real good variety of people, and then you can work with those strengths.
Yep, exactly. No, we'd be very happy to work with you. So we should certainly talk about this at a later point of how we could actually do something in Baltimore, and I'd be very happy to join forces.
That sounds like a plan to me. This is just an initial inquiry, and just to let everybody know you guys are around here, and just to promote Baltimore this way too. I would really like to have a partnership with you guys, and to really expand Baltimore's horizon, I think, to talk about people and to exchange ideas with people and from all over the world, and you're a very good basis for that. Is there anything else you want to add there, Mark?
No, I just wanted to thank you again for the opportunity to have this conversation. And as I said, it's really very important for us to increase the outreach in the USA. I am an American in background, and I really would very much like to get more involved in activities in the US. So I look forward to the opportunity in Baltimore and beyond. And I'd be very happy if anyone listening would like to join us for the current conferences, as well as to propose suggestions for new activities that we can expand on.
Well, give us the contact info again.
Okay. So the website is www.culturaldiplomacy.org. And then the best email address for me and my colleagues is just info@culturaldiplomacy.org.
I've been talking to Mark Donfried, the executive director and founder of the Institute for Cultural Diplomacy. This is Dave Custy, and this is Baltimore Internet Radio. Mark, thank you very much. I will be talking to you soon. Good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Okay, it was a pleasure.